And welcome to the Half Inch Speaker Podcast.
Episode 5.
I'm Andrew.
I'm Bill. And this is our first episode recording after our unintentional summer break 2013.
Woo! Partly my fault.
Also partly my fault. It just is the busy season. You'll have just heard our episode before this, so that doesn't matter to any of you listeners, but...
For us, it's been a while.
Yeah. So it will probably take us a little bit to find our feeling again. But you chose the movie for this week, so why don't you go ahead and introduce it?
I chose The Last Castle, which was in 2001 and directed by Tony Scott. Was not directed by Tony Scott. I don't know why I said that. It was Rod Lurie. Good movie. I wouldn't say one of my favorites, but it's one I really like. The short story is basically ex-general gets court-martialed for disobeying a direct order and ends up in a high-security prison. And I'm not going to give away too much more than that.
Well, then it's going to be a short discussion.
At the moment, yeah.
All right, so right off, the first 50 minutes to an hour of this movie, I hated.
Yeah, it's slow and doesn't do anything. It's just daily life.
Well, my biggest problem is there's no reason that I care what these characters are doing because they're not characters.
Yeah.
Like, most of my notes are for that first part because after it hits about the 55-minute mark, the movie gets really enjoyable and fun and good. But also, I feel like they got better at making the film later on.
Because
early on, the sound editing is awful.
Oh, trust me, I know.
Like, obvious sound library sounds and...
I know.
It was just...
It's not one of my favorite movies for how well it's made. I'll give you that much.
Yeah, and they did the villain, especially in his setup. he's like something out of a Mel Brooks movie.
A little bit.
Like, yeah. He's just so over the top. Like, the opening scenes, it's like the inmates are all playing basketball in the yard, and it's hip-hop. They use the song Ante Up, which I really like. The song choices were pretty good. But then they cut to, like, the general, and he's up there, or whatever, he's colonel, or the warden, essentially.
Yeah, warden.
Looking down, and there's classical music playing.
Yep.
And I was like, that's dumb.
Well, yeah, well, he's supposed to be the... He's not a warrior. He is not anyone who's ever seen anything. The only thing he's ever seen is this place, and he feels like he's way too high-end and classy to be here.
Yeah, I felt like it was pretty obvious and pretty...
Yeah.
Subtlety is not this film's strong point.
Oh, absolutely not.
Not at all. The score will start to do something. You're like, the general... Who is the guy who is, he used to be a 3-star general and now he's in prison. He's the main character.
Irwin is his name.
He is about to give a speech and the score is like, dun, dun.
Yeah.
And you're like, calm down.
I feel like I just leveled up in like Zelda or something.
You don't level up in Zelda.
Whatever. You know what I meant.
Final Fantasy?
That one. Like that? Yeah. All right. That one. I don't play those games.
You should.
I know.
So then there's a bunch of scenes that are supposed to like build character, but everyone acts kind of like a robot. They're just like, this is my line, I am saying it. And this is just in the very beginning of the film. Like there's his scene where his daughter comes to visit and it's supposed to be like emotional because this is the dad who was like never there for her. Like he was never a dad to her. And he's supposed to be like, well, I was in the army and I'm sorry and stuff. But there's like no emotion behind the scene.
I don't know. I tend to disagree. I thought that was a decent scene. I thought they did a pretty good job at getting the point across. He's not very emotional. He's not supposed to be.
Yeah,
because he's an army guy. That's all he
does.
There's
a difference between not being emotional and having no emotion. And in the first hour, he and most of the characters have no emotion. That's how it felt like to me.
Yeah.
I just and I also thought the scene where he had to carry the rocks and then he got tripped by the inmates and then he carried the rocks to the end and then they're like, oh, well, you have to keep doing it and you have to carry him back. And everyone's betting on him. Like, I can't really articulate it, but the way that scene was done, I was like, this scene was so stupid.
I don't know. I think that was it's definitely a crucial scene in the whole movie. Because that's how he gains their respect and trust. And
yeah.
It kind of shows that the warden is a dick. Like a major dick. Because he holds
the again, I feel like there were some other parts of the warden being a dick that I found more believable. And that one was very cartoonish in the way. Like forcing, trying to force a... Aguilar, like the kind of like stuttery, messed up like guy when he saluted and forced him to stand in the rain. I thought that was a much more powerful punishment.
Yeah,
and but right after that scene with the rocks, there's the scene where they start building. Like, there's this wall that's supposed to represent like an old prison.
Yeah, it was the original prison before they rebuilt it. Yeah.
And General Irwin basically convinces them that this is their wall and they should take pride in it, and so they do. Like, they start listening to Aguilar, whose dad was a mason, and they start building this wall, and the warden, he doesn't like this at all because it's supposed to be his wall, it's supposed to be a sign of his control over them, so he's gonna have it bulldozed. And Aguilar stands in front of the bulldozer and gets shot with a rubber bullet in the ear, killing him. And there, and then his funeral, that's when I think the movie got good.
It also shows the disorder in his own chain of command, because his own soldier doesn't agree with what's going on. And you can see that.
Yeah, his second in command is Captain, who I wish we saw a little bit more of.
Because
I think it would have been a lot cooler to, like, you sort of see him being like, oh, I'm not super comfortable with this. But I feel like he could have had a good character arc that they didn't really explore.
Yeah, no, I can agree to that. I think it was okay how he was in there, because he was just enough that it was clear that not everybody there believed in the warden's, like, ways of doing things, and he didn't want to be there. He didn't want to do these things, but he kind of has to.
Yeah. One thing I feel like the film did a pretty poor job of establishing is that this was a prison just for ex-military.
Yeah.
They, like, it wasn't until Aguilar's funeral where he grabs just one of the random guys, like, you were a drill sergeant, right? And he does the yell and they all fall in line and stuff like that. That was the first time I went, oh, they were all soldiers.
Yeah.
I just thought that it was just a coincidence that, so, of course, Irwin's, was a general. And then we find out that Aguilar was a corporal.
Yeah.
And we found out that the, I forget exactly what it was, the guy who, Yates? Like, took the bets.
Yates.
He was,
He was a medic or something, wasn't he?
No, he was in the Marines.
That's right.
And his dad
knew Irwin.
Was a prisoner of war with Irwin.
Yeah.
And I thought that it was just going to be one of those cases where it's like, okay, so the military personnel are going to kind of flock to him. Well,
and never mind, Colonel Winter, who was the warden.
No.
He's a colonel.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I was thinking it's General Wheeler is the...
General friend,
friend with Irwin, who they're trying to get to see how disorderly Colonel Winter's prison is getting.
Exactly, yeah. It's James Gandolfini.
Yeah, James Gandolfini. R.I.P.
Yeah, he did a great job in that, by the way.
Yeah, he did. He was
I mean, he was the villain, but he was
good. And again, once I kind of adjusted to how cartoony the villain was going to be, which, again, I started to do early on, and then there was some points where it went over the top. But because the reason he hates Irwin so much is because he's in his office and he super respects the man. He wants him to sign his book. And then he overhears General Irwin saying how people who collect military memorabilia have never been in the battlefield, because they look at them and they go, oh, what a neat trophy. They don't look at them and go, oh, what an object that took someone's life.
Yeah. And he's offended by that. I mean, it's a sensible form of logic. It makes sense.
Yeah, but at the same time, I did kind of like that, because I do like when it's a very slight,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, General Irwin didn't really mean all that much by it at the time. He didn't. I mean, he meant a lot by it later on.
Absolutely. It was awesome. Doing it. You're right, though. After about the 55 minute mark, it does get really good, though.
Because that's when they go to war.
Yeah.
That's when they start coming up with strategies, and all the strategies don't make sense in a logical way, but they all make sense in a
movie way.
But where they're doing stuff like purposely getting like beat up to draw the guards one way so they can get away with doing stuff, falsely making weapons and hiding them in their bunks so when the colonel finds out about their plan, he sends all his men to search through that. As not
and gets
in the
them
yard.
All in the yard.
Yeah, and so there's only a couple of guys in the yard, so all the inmates are able to overpower him.
No, it's very well thought out, which is kind of funny. And I like, one of the things I think I really liked was the subtlety of the idea of the castle, which brings in the title, the last castle. And I like how they did that. They made the play, they were like, all right, well, let's think about what makes a castle. It's one of my favorite things about the whole thing, how he breaks it down. And you think about it, and you're like, oh, wow, that's actually kind of a... interesting way to think about it.
Yeah, and how he gives each things. He goes, there's the wall, there's the towers, there's the garrison, and the flag.
And the flag, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's technically, I mean, I see the logic there.
Yeah,
that's right.
It is. It has all of the elements of it. And that entire scene from when they're planning and when they're doing it, like, that entire stretch of time, again, like, about an... Because this is like an hour.
It's a little bit long.
No, it's like 2 hours and 15 or something like that.
Yeah, it's a little bit long.
Yeah. I could have shaved some off of the beginning, I think, It would have definitely benefited. Like, I think this movie could have been, like, I never think it would be amazing, but I think it could have been great if it was like an hour and a half.
Hmm.
What was I going to say? All right, so spoilers as usual. We should probably always start the podcast with that because we just talk about everything in the movie. But at the very end, part of their plan is they're going to take the American flag and they're going to fly it upside down, which is a sign of distress.
Yep.
To show that he lost control of it. And so General Irwin, he starts to put up the flag after like they've basically been defeated and like the inmates are all on the ground and he still is doing that. And the colonel... shoots him and then is arrested for doing so, and then they all look up and the flag's flown upside right, like it's flown the right way, and everyone's like, oh. And I was like, that was a little cheesy movie,
a little bit cheesy, but it kind of went with it, because the Colonel Winter, had he just looked at the stupid flag, would have realized, oh, he's really okay, he gave up, he's done.
But
of him raising the flag himself.
Yeah, and the entire point is that he wasn't going to raise the flag upside down.
Yeah.
I actually just realized a connection that I didn't realize when I was watching the film. So when he's talking to Yates, and he's talking to, I think it's Yates, when he's talking about being a prisoner of war.
Yeah.
And about how people said that... like his Yates' father said that the general kept him alive, and the general goes through this entire talk about how one of the first things they try and do is break you, and how every night he prayed for death for himself, but the thing that kept him alive was hearing the screams of the other men and knowing that he had to get them out.
Yeah,
and that's what he's doing by raising the flag upside right. Like the end goal was not, hey, I need to make this place better for me. It was, I need to make this place better for the other men.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
He knew that the way to do that is by, like, just having it be disorderly doesn't guarantee that the colonel is going to be removed.
Yeah. No, there needed to be some critical...
Having him kill someone on purpose.
Yeah.
In front of not everybody. Just the inmates, but all of his men.
Yeah.
That was the ultimate goal. The flag didn't matter.
Yeah.
The flag was a red herring.
No, but it was good. It's one of, for whatever reason, despite the fact that you're right, it is very slow in the first half. Even though I disagree a little bit on some of the acting, but I still think it's one of my favorite movies for whatever reason.
That's fair enough. I'm not here to take that away from you.
Oh, I know. I wouldn't let you.
Nah, I am.
I'll wreck your castle.
You're not allowed to like things ever, Andrew. Oh. Unless I light them.
Well, I'm going to wreck your castle for it. We're going to have to go to war now.
It's
like a game, though, right?
Just tip your chair over.
I'll spill your drink.
I would have already spilled yours. You're drinking it right now. But so, again, I think that overall, it's that's a fun watch. Like, if you have some time to waste, I would recommend it. Again, it's about, I would say it's about half good, half bad, and
if equals out to good, I guess. Okay.
Yeah, it's worth a watch, but yeah. We can probably move on for that unless you have anything else you want to say about it.
I like it.
All right.
Which is pretty clear already, so.
All right, and then for the album, I'm the one who picked that, and I picked Billy Bragg's Tooth and Nail. This is one of my favorite albums of 2013 to come out so far this year. It's very folky. It's very... Billy Bragg, he made his name as a protest singer, an English protest singer in the 80s. And I find it interesting because this one, there's a lot less of that and a lot more personal songs. And I just really dig it. Like, it was all recorded sort of live in the studio where everyone was just playing together and doing it in one take. And I can't wait to hear what you like and dislike about it.
Yeah. Well, let's start with the first one, shall we? Get that going.
This is a January song, right?
Yes. So overall, you're again, I go into this blind because you recommend it, and I just listen to it. It's pretty much all I get. I liked it. It's definitely folky. Not all of it was my absolute favorite thing to go through. This particular song I liked. It's kind of relaxed, kind of chill. Which was nice.
Yeah, but it's relaxed, but it's also about trying to relieve stress.
Yeah.
Like the first line where it's, I'm so tightly wound and bleeding, feel just like a guitar string.
Yeah.
Like, I always really liked that song. Again, it is sort of, the entire album overall is pretty laid back, even the more upbeat songs. But again, it's, a lot of it is very like, a personal take on things and less. And I just have to say this, the you won't be able to hear this on the music in the background on the podcast, but the bass sound that they have, like the way that they got a nice full round stand up bass sound.
Yeah.
I love that.
No, it's very, I think it's very well recorded, especially for, as you said, it's like just all playing in one room. It's,
yeah.
Nice. I actually would never have guessed that, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
I think it's simple, which is one of my other favorite things about it. Like, they don't go over the top. They don't have effects. I mean, it's folk, so they don't really do that too often.
Yeah.
Anyway. But it's not over-the-top reverb. There's no crazy mixing styles. No. Straightforward. Simple.
It's,
which sounds great.
It's, I mean, at the core of everything is Billy Bragg and his guitar.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the band is around him. And sometimes not even really around him.
Yeah. No, I think... It's great. I don't really have much else to say about it.
All right, let's move on to the next song. This is No One Knows Nothing Anymore.
Yep.
And so this is a bit closer to the type of song he would write. He writes more often where it's kind of has a social meaning behind it.
Yeah.
He's very left in his politics.
Yep.
But again, this one's a pretty basic, pretty light. This one's not one of my favorites on the album.
Well, one of the things that I thought was interesting, I don't know why it clicks in my head, but something about the drums kind of catches me on this, and I don't know what it is yet. I've been trying to figure it out. Maybe it's the fact that it's like a folk band, but it's like a full drum set. I don't know, and it sounds a little bit odd, but I like it.
Yeah, and it,
something weird about it that I like.
It does a lot of the, like... The cymbals are drawn. There's a lot of attention drawn to the cymbals.
Yeah.
The drums are very loud on this track.
Yeah.
They're kind of the star instrument of the track.
Yeah.
Which
well,
is weird for
that
a folk.
And his voice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're about the same level, which is crazy for normal music.
Yeah. I do love the slide guitar on this.
Yeah,
song.
The slide guitar sounds great.
I haven't looked up who all the musicians I would play on this, but I would love to do that at some point, because I think all of them are amazing at their instruments. Like,
no, yeah, they do a great
job. There's nothing really, like, there's no point where I'm like, oh, that was shitty playing.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
Handyman Blues.
This is tied as my favorite song on the album. And a lot of it has to do with the sentiment behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can really relate to being like, hey, my dad can fix anything, but don't ask me to do anything because I'm an artist. Like, yeah. I can't help you out fixing your car. I can't help you out making something. But I can write. Well, I think I can write. And when I'm doing stuff, like, there's a line at the end of the song where it says, it may look like I'm just reading the paper, but I'll turn those ideas into gold straw later, where he's talking about how, yeah, it doesn't look like I'm working when I'm just sitting there and reading, or I'm just sitting there and looking at ideas, but that's how I get my work done. I take as much in as I can, and then I compartmentalize that and use that to create art. And I think this is a brilliant way to just sort of get that out.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I'm in the same kind of boat. I can relate to that completely. I mean, you know. So, yeah, I get it completely. This is actually one of my favorite ones on here, too.
And it's just so
laid back. So laid back, yeah.
And that line there, I don't know much about pottery. Let's just shoot back the E and get rid of a T.
Yeah.
And he makes it poetry.
Yeah.
That's such a clever line. Like, I think lyrically, this is his best song on this album. And again, it's just laid back, little slide guitar, little acoustic, just. Because it's not like he's mad that you want him to help you. He's just like, listen, I understand that you really wish I could, but I can't. I need to do what I can do, and that's not hanging drapes. And
it's, no, I completely it's just agree. Good. Completely.
And we basically talked through all of this one.
Yeah.
It's also short.
Yeah, it's only got like 30 more seconds.
Because that's the other thing. Like, none of his songs are long.
Well, no one knows anything. No one knows nothing anymore. Is 4.5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then he's got another almost a five-minute one coming at the end.
Okay, so I think it might be that none of them feel long.
Yeah.
Like, none of them are, I don't get bored during any of them in a way where I'm like, all right, when are we done with this musical idea?
Yeah. I don't feel like I'm listening to the same song over and over again. That's the other thing I like about
which is kind of hard with folk a lot of the time. Like, people who, people really like the Civil Wars, and I think that they're a good band. But sometimes I feel like I'm listening to the same song over and over again.
Yeah. Well, I had that problem this weekend at a festival I was working at. A folk band played, and, you know, half hour into their set, I'm like, are they still playing the same song?
Yeah, or even a band like Mumford & Sons.
Yeah. As much as I like them, I can see that.
But that's why I can't listen to them as an album. I can listen to them as, like, a group of singles, because I can be like, hey.
Yeah.
Because I get tired of listening to it. But now this on. Song. Yeah.
I ain't got no home
in this world anymore.
Yeah.
He says it a lot in the lyrics, but again, this is a bit more of him personally being like, I feel like I don't fit in anymore.
Yeah, I can understand that one.
And again, musically, it's one of the most simple songs on the album.
Although I do like the accent of the soft mallets on the cymbals.
I was just going to bring that up.
Yeah.
Where that little roll.
Yep. Very classical and like orchestral sense to it, which is nice.
Yeah. And
I always like stuff like that.
In his vocal delivery, like one of the most somber vocal deliveries he gives on the album. And it's about to get a bit bigger right now. And there's that little roll.
Yeah.
But again, it's very simple and very basic. And we can probably move on unless you have anything else to say.
Nah, I'm good. I mean, simple is says it all, really, to me. Simple and effective. For most of these songs.
Yeah.
This one is a little bit more, in my opinion, it's not as simple. Just with some of the chord progressions and stuff like that. But at the same time, it reminds me a little bit of Richie Valen. In a sense, it's the guitar, the electric guitar. It has a Richie Valen sound to it to me, and I don't know why. Not like the whole song, just the guitar.
I don't...
I can't think of the name of the song. But I know in the movie La Bamba that I've watched millions of times as a kid, there's this one scene, and it plays one of his hits, and I just am blanking on the name. And it's kind of slow, like, not this slow, but kind of. And it sounds like that guitar.
Yeah.
And that's what I think of when I hear the song.
That's possible. I get, like, you know who could have done this, the best version of the song ever, if he was still alive? Otis Redding.
Oh yeah,
this could be such an Otis Redding song.
I see.
Especially there's a line where it's how can a man say he's strong when he can't pick up the telephone and say he's wrong? And that it's just such a good line, and Otis Redding could have rocked the shit out of that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he died in the 60s.
Yeah.
But it is. This is more of a laid back soul song.
Yeah, it is.
And also, the English are really good at doing Americana, because this is very soul country driven, and you know he's from England.
Yeah. No,
which I would never guess listening to his music.
I wouldn't guess it, but I remember you mentioning that actually when you gave me the CD.
Yeah.
So, cool. So, do on to others. It's our next one. This is such a happy-go-lucky thing to me.
Yeah.
I feel like sunny day.
It's like if it's almost Jack Johnson-y.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people use as an insult, but I think when Jack Johnson does a good song, it's really good, and when he does a bad song, it's really bad. But I don't mind that sort of laid back, like acoustic-y, like knocking guitar.
And I like it.
The sentiment is pretty basic, because it's just, hey, whether you are religious or not, which I think is a brilliant part of the song, where he talks about people who are atheists and don't believe in the Bible and believe in science, but how the term "do unto others as you would have them do to you" still applies to everyone. And other than that, there's not a whole lot to say about this song. It's very simple and very...
pretty straightforward.
Yeah, and one of the more upbeat ones. I like the little knock he does, which I guarantee he did on the guitar.
Yeah, oh yeah. So, Over You, again, we get that nice slide guitar.
Yeah.
One of the things I find interesting, in other folk music that I've heard, they use a little more reverb on their vocals, pretty much across the board. But his doesn't seem to be very prominent, which is interesting. I mean, it fits his voice.
Yeah.
I'm happy they didn't.
Yeah, like, I feel like they're probably just, like, a vocal plate.
Yeah.
Like, a very slight one.
Yeah. And they don't, like, it's really not a lot, which is nice.
Yeah, and that's because he has a voice. Like, part of the problem is a lot of the people where you hear their voice being super affected in that way, a lot of folk artists.
Yeah.
Their voice is not distinctive.
Yeah.
And so you're like, okay, what band is this? And usually you can tell by the way they affect their voice, where you're like, oh, this one uses a lot of reverb like this. This one uses a lot of delay. But with him, he just has a voice, so he can just let it carry itself.
Yeah. I like the song. It's definitely, it's for whatever reason, it's one of my favorites on the album, and I can't place why. It's like happy, but not.
Yeah, it's no, it's a pretty melancholy song. And a lot of the music I like is happy-ish with the really dark undertones.
Yeah.
And this song really goes into that. Like, you could just as easily cover this song and add some dirty distortion to the guitar instead of a slide guitar and just shift the key a bit to be more minor and just...
I think it's the piano that does it for me. Just adds that extra dimension. Because I don't hear piano most in a lot of the other songs that much. So, I don't know.
It shows up a couple of times throughout the album. Yeah, a couple times, but again, like...
This one's prominent. Like, I hear the piano.
And that's the other thing. A lot of folk albums are like, oh, these are the instruments they use. They're on every track.
Yeah.
He is like, oh, this track needs this. This track needs this.
Yeah.
Which is why it doesn't... variety. Yeah, it doesn't feel like you're listening to the same thing over and over again.
Like, I haven't heard strings a while, but he had strings early in the album, which was nice.
Yeah.
I know he has them again later.
Yeah, I think No One Knows Nothing Anymore is strings at it.
And that's nice. I like strings with folk music. I think they sound good. I mean, especially if you're using an upright bass.
Yeah.
Like, it completes that sound.
Alright, but,
Goodbye, goodbye. Nice little lullaby-ish, folky.
Yeah, it's...
lullaby.
And that's what it is, I mean...
Yeah. Also one of my favorites on the album, though.
It's just very, again, the word I'm using, it's just very, this is almost the reverse of the other one, which sounds happy with a little, like, grain of, like, sinisterness in it.
Yeah.
This one feels a lot more downtrodden.
Yeah.
So that, but just seems to have that, like, little grain of just, like,
hope.
But, yeah, hope's the word I was going to use, too. But it's just, life will be fine.
Yeah.
It
the sun
now.
Will come out tomorrow.
It's only a day away, Andrew.
It's a long day, though.
Is this one how long is this one?
This is 3:18.
Yeah. What, did someone message you on Facebook?
Apparently, it just ba-doop.
Just someone commented, I think.
Commented on your post.
All right, but
because you're invisible is what they said.
Okay. I'm glad the podcast listeners got to hear that.
Yep.
Oh,
and you got likes, too.
Yeah. I can check Facebook later, Andrew. when we're doing the podcast, we're focusing on the podcast, young man.
The podcast?
Podcast. I'm rebranding this shit.
Awesome.
All right, so let's move on, because... we got distracted, so...
I know, but I like getting distracted. It's more character.
This is the only true, like, rocker on the album.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And, honestly, it's one that is instantly likable, but ultimately one of the more forgettable, I think.
Yeah, it's not one of those that you're going to think about it, like, the next day.
Yeah, it's not like I'm going to sit around and going to be like, oh, you know what, I want to listen to that song.
By the way, the song is called Then Will Be a Reckoning, for those of you who... don't know.
Yeah.
Or can't hear it.
And again, it's after all the more personal songs on the album, this is another one that's a little bit more like politically tinged and just like, yeah, people will have to pay for what they did and stuff like that, and we'll have our way. And it's very like called to armsy, and again, it's not... it would fit better on some of his other albums, I think.
Yeah.
As opposed to this album, which is a lot more personal, a lot more... like, it's like he's still writing protest songs, but he's writing protest songs about himself. As opposed to the world as a whole.
One of the things, like, just talking about it, I didn't think about this, obviously, while listening to it, and the song itself doesn't make me think of this. But when we talked about Imagine Dragons and Radioactive... for whatever reason, the thought of this song and the discussion reminded me of that song in particular, because of its setting that it made and didn't do anything with it. This has, like, I don't know, for some reason now listening to it and talking about it kind of reminds me of that, but it's actually doing something with
situations. Yeah, no, it's I would agree. I think this is my least favorite song on this album, and I think it's better than anything Imagine Dragons did.
Yeah, maybe they should take a listen.
Yeah. And it's
that? Take a listen.
Take a listen, Imagine Dragons, people who will never listen to our podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do,
yeah,
you should come on. We'll talk.
Yeah, we'll talk to you.
But
we do like some of your stuff. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, Andrew likes more of it than I do.
Yeah, I got friends who love it.
So do I. They're all wrong.
Oh yeah,
but I think we can move on again. Like it's just it's a fun rocker. It's just there's better songs. And honestly, I'm not going to say it's a bad song. I just think it doesn't necessarily work on the album as good as other stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't fit everything else. I can agree with that, yeah. So Somewhere Over the Rainbow, I mean Chasing Rainbows. Sorry.
It's not Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Does it sound like Somewhere Over the Rainbow?
I could hear it to this, though. Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Yeah, maybe if you change the key and the tempo and everything about the song.
Yeah, I could hear it.
I could put Rainbow Connection in. Why are there so
That's
many?
That's the one I actually was trying to think of, but I couldn't.
You couldn't think of Rainbow Connection?
I couldn't, no. The sheet music's sitting on my piano right now.
I was going to throw you a water bottle, but there's still water in it.
Yeah, there's not really much in there, though.
Yeah, but I would cause a mess.
Yeah, it would. And probably sound terrible on the podcast.
That's fine.
Speaking of the podcast, back to the podcast. Chasing Rainbows.
This is very, this is one of the more country like songs on the album, but like in that old school like Willie Nelson type of way.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah, it's not one of my favorites.
It's not Reckoning and It, I feel, are just a small little dip on the album, and I don't have much to say. Like, I enjoy the song while it's on. I don't really think about it when it's off.
Yeah. Your Name on My Tongue. For a minute, I thought I misread that. And I was like, did I read that right? No, I didn't.
Your Name on My Tongue.
I'm right. Cool. Again, I one of the things I liked about this, and you can... It's a simple thing, is actually the intro. With the drums.
And the piano.
And the piano, yeah. I just think it's great. Although, once he starts singing, it reminds me of another song, and I can't place what song it is. But a completely different artist. And I can't place it, and it's driving me crazy.
Yeah, I don't know.
I remember thinking it the first time I heard it. I still think it. I still can't think of the song.
But this is a good example of allowing other instruments, because the piano is the main instrument of this album.
Yeah.
This album. This song.
I know what you meant.
It's not of the album. And the drums are bigger and more echoey and more...
No, definitely. And I like that, whereas the piano is the focus, it's not a lot, especially in the beginning.
Yeah.
It's accents. And then they got the guitar stuff going on and to kind of round it out a little bit, which is nice. It's a good song. This one's almost 5 minutes. This is the...
Yeah, this is one of the longer ones on it. Yeah. And
this is the longest one.
Yeah, and again, when I listen to it, it doesn't really...
doesn't feel it.
And I think it's interesting because... we'll talk about this more and then... Once we hear the next song, but this sounds like an album closer.
Yeah,
like it sounds like most people would have put this song as the last song on the album.
Yep.
A big, like, just like statement, a big, a longing song, just something a little different than what came before.
No, yeah, you're right. It's not obviously on this album.
Yeah,
which we'll get to, but. I think it could have been fine with this.
Yeah, and it, again, like, it sounds like a final statement.
Absolutely. It's also one of my favorites on the album.
Yeah. The last song is tied with Handyman Blues as my favorite on the album.
Okay.
And it's because after that big statement, after his other two or three more political songs being more like the world's kind of going to shit... This one's called Tomorrow's Gonna Be a Better Day.
Which I'm laughing a little bit to myself because I said the sun will come out tomorrow already.
Yeah.
So I just think it's funny that I forgot about that.
Yeah, but
anyway.
Again, instead of ending with a big statement, he ends with a very stripped down, just him, mostly him and the guitar.
Which, again, is a great way to close it out.
And it's despite all of his fire and all of his, like, vitriol at the world and wanting it to change, he believes that we can. Which a lot of people who write political songs don't. A lot of people say, things are shit, they're going to be shit. And he says, hey... The world's not great, but we are making it better. We're taking steps to try and make it better.
In other words, the sun will come out tomorrow.
It's only a day away.
Regardless of how long that day will be. I like the whistling. Sorry.
I was going to say, that's what I was going to bring up.
Oh, okay.
As you may remember from episode 4, when we talked about Pomplamoose, I kind of have a thing for whistling. I think whistling's really cool as an instrument. And... except opposed to the Pomplamoose one, where it's like a purposefully kind of like
bad,
shitty
whistle. Which is funny.
Yeah, which is funny for what they do. But and this one, it's just like perfect.
Yeah. Recording whistles sucks.
Oh, it's awful.
I hate doing it. But it sounds so good when you get it right. I've recorded a few songs that had them and just was the worst day of my life. No, it's not. But really sucked.
Yeah. Also, he used parapet in a rhyme, and that was really cool.
Yeah.
Like, I would recommend you go, when you listen to the album, I would recommend looking at the lyrics, because he does some pretty cool little vocal gymnastics, not vocal, but lyrical gymnastics. Like, he's a good writer. And I just love this song. Tomorrow's gonna be a better day. Gonna make it that way. Also, it's one of the shorter ones on the album, isn't it?
It is. It's only 3 minutes and 11 seconds, which is, I think, the third shortest song on the album. Yeah. Yeah, 222, 305, and 311. Yeah. So, which is really funny, because this is tied with Handyman Blues, right?
Yeah.
That's the other really short song.
Yeah, the...
Well, not the first. The first one's the shortest, but...
Yeah, which is my third favorite. So
there you go. All your favorite songs are the shortest ones on the album. What does that say? Just kidding.
It says that they were perfectly crafted.
Indeed.
All right. And so that's the musical segment. And then, Andrew, do you have any recommendations? Anything you've been into lately? I know the answer to this because we talked about it earlier off mic, but now we're on a podcast.
Yeah, so I'm going to talk about it again. Yeah, I finally caved in a while, but I've been trying to get into this for a while, and I finally did, and I have lost so much of my life to it already, and I have no shame about it. I've been playing a lot of Star Wars The Old Republic online. Well, I only say online because some people don't realize it is an online game. It's really only called Star Wars The Old Republic. Fantastic game. I mean, especially with the new updates, whereas I'm a little bit annoyed at them because... since the newer updates, they've caused some lag. But that could also be because I'm running it off of Parallels, and it's not meant for Mac. And
you're just a monster.
I know. I should just, hang myself with my laptop cord.
That was dark.
I'm kidding. It's okay. But no, it's really good. I mean, they got a lot of class options. It's free to play unless you want to pay them. If you do pay them, you do get a significant amount of stuff. I've been playing free mostly until the other night where my brother told me he wanted to subscribe and he wanted me to subscribe, but I can't afford it right now, so he paid for it for me. so now I'm a free player, which explains why most of my life has disappeared in the last 3 days, because I'm making the best use of like the 30 or 60 days I have.
Yeah, I didn't want to tell you this. This is why we're recording the podcast again. This is an intervention. Come on out, Andrew's mom and dad.
Oh, no.
They're not here.
No, they're not.
But
I was up till 4:30 in the morning the other day. And then I got up at like 10 and then kept playing all day.
Yeah. To what? Walk to places in Star Wars? Is that what you do most of the time?
No, actually. I am a Jedi Sentinel and I hunt down Sith and destroy them.
This is.
I have two lightsabers.
All right, this is honestly a weird thing. Like, I We've talked. I am as into Star Wars as a lot of people.
Oh yeah.
My goal is
to get you to play this.
Yeah,
even as a free player.
I never will.
Why?
Because it's an MMO.
So?
And MMOs are awful.
It's really actually not that bad. Like, I'd never play WoW. I'll never play WoW. I know that it's right up my alley, but I will never play it.
Here's the thing. I've played a lot of MMOs. A lot. From paid ones to free ones. And everyone says, oh, it's not like other ones. It is.
Well, I'm not saying it's not like other ones. I'm just saying it's not that bad.
There's a lot of, go do this mission where you have to go kill these many of these things and go...
Yeah,
do this mission. And a lot of the time is spent getting from point A to point B. And
well, that actually, as I showed you before, I just got a speeder, which significantly drops the time you have to go there.
Yeah, it's just like you can get a mountain WoW and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
well, you can walk, which takes fucking forever. I hated that. You're right. That was when it drove me crazy, is I got really annoyed and I was about to quit. And then they were like, oh, you can run now. Cool. Somehow it took me 14 levels to learn how to run. That's cool.
No, it's like in Batman Arkham Asylum where you have to level up so you can learn how to throw a guy.
Like, what? Like, there are stupid things in the game. I'm not saying it's perfect. Yeah. But
also,
I like it.
Also, my time as a gamer, like, I don't like a lot of the big games because I don't really like multiplayer.
Yeah.
I don't really like games that don't really have an end. And MMOs don't have an end. The end is getting bored.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, the end kind of is level 50.
Yeah, but if it's like any other MMO, that's... Like, for example, WoW. WoW really starts when you get to, like, level 60. Like, that's when it's, like... Or when you get to the level cap. Like, that's when, like, you're in, like, the game.
Yeah. No, this one...
And a lot of MMOs are like that.
Yeah, that's true. I one of the things I really like about this... I mean, I have friends who play WoW religiously, and I grew up with friends who play WoW religiously, and I watched them play at times. Like, I go over, we play video games, and they're like, all right, I'm gonna play WoW now, and I'd be like, cool, I'm gonna sit here and watch, that's fun. But anyway, like, and that's one of the things I noticed, like, you don't really do anything. That's what one of the reasons I never wanted to play. But what I've experienced in Star Wars so far, the story is great. I love the story. I mean, and there's several different combinations of the stories, and then you got all the side missions that you can do. You don't have to, but I mean, obviously you level faster if you do. In all honesty, I feel like I'm playing a regular RPG, and I don't really play with other people too much. My brother and I now play like every Tuesday night, which is kind of nice.
I'll probably never play it because it's just not my type of game.
Yeah.
And it's on, and honestly,
play it. Don't listen.
Start like, the last Star Wars game I played where I was super into it, like video game, specifically
yeah.
video
yeah.
game, was Jedi Starfighter 2 on the PS2.
I didn't play that one.
That one I really enjoyed.
I remember playing Jedi Starfighter.
Yeah, it's the sequel to that.
Yeah.
And
I didn't beat it, but I remember playing
it. And like, you know, you got a lot of the characters come back.
Yeah.
Your main person's Adi Gallier. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in... Oh, actually... I'll go to one of my recommendations because it's kind of ties into this. My favorite type of games, I like games that are very, very telling a story. Mm-hmm. The game I'm going to recommend is called To the Moon. It's available on Steam. It's about, I don't know, 4 to 6 hours long, depending on how long it takes. The gameplay is very minimal. It's 16-bit graphics. The game tells this story about you playing as these scientists, and what you do... What your job is people on their deathbed tell you a wish of their life, and you go into their memories and plant a false memory early enough back that they're basically able to have a dream where they had life played out and they got to do that thing. And usually someone says something and they say exactly why they wanted to do it, and it's pretty easy. But the concept of this game is this old man's dying. He says, I want to go to the moon, but I don't know why.
Hmm.
And you're going through his memories and you're trying to figure it out. And it's so emotionally impactive. It's so... Like, it made me cry.
Wow.
Like, it was that emotionally
I'll have to check
good.
This game out. Is this PC or is this...
It is, but you have Parallels.
Yes,
so you can download Steam and Parallels and
I
play
Steam.
It. Which
yeah.
is on the PC side.
Oh, yeah, I don't know the PC
yeah.
side yet.
I have the same thing on mine. I have Mac Steam and PC Steam on my computer.
Totally random. Actually, it's not really random because I just got a text saying this. You know what drives me crazy? When people say something like this, how is you today?
See, like, I'm of the opinion, if you're going to say something that's grammatically incorrect like that, you go all the way and go, how is you?
Yeah, at least like go all the way for it. But how is you today? Like, yes, I know you're asking me how I am today. You don't need the today. And how is you?
Is this going to be someone who's going to hear this, Andrew?
Probably. Hey, you know who you are.
And you should feel ashamed of yourself.
Yeah.
I don't know who you're talking about.
It's okay.
Actually, I'm.
Actually, it's really funny because every week I always say something that this person will get. Something. Whether it's like one word or one little thing, just to see if they notice. And so far, no. Even though I tell them that there's something in there. Like, it's not even a secret. I don't tell them what it is, but so it kind of is a secret. But
you should tell them that there's nothing in this one.
Yep. Maybe I will.
And then when they listen, they'll be like, hey.
Maybe then they'll get it.
No.
Yes, I'm laughing at you.
So anything else besides Star Wars you've been into?
Not really. Starting the new job, which is fun. I mean, so obviously I'm surrounded by magic cards all the time. I'm starting a job at a game store, which is fun.
Yeah, it's
games and hobbies, you know.
I'm sure it'll be hard not to be like, hey, I got paid. Let me go buy that thing.
Yeah, pretty much. But fortunately, I've already bought most of the games.
Yeah, you've already wasted a lot of money there.
Yeah. I mean, I've been going there for who knows how long. So I have most of the stuff that I want. The hard part will be getting the new books for like Pathfinder and all that other stuff that I'm into that comes out. And especially because we're talking about running a first edition D&D game. Yeah. First edition. Maybe even second. We're going to do a first, a second. We're going to go way back.
Yeah, there's a lot. I actually know a lot of people who are doing stuff like that.
Well, especially, they just reprint.
Yeah. Well, especially because they reprinted them for the lead up to
fifth
D&D Next, as they call it. Most people just call it fifth edition.
Yeah, it's fifth.
But for me, I don't really have another recommendation except for something that I made. Because on the last podcast, I told you guys that my albums, I only write songs with problems and lay the past to rest. It'd be great if I could say my own stuff.
Yeah,
they were available on Spotify. Now they're available on iTunes and Amazon MP3.
That's exciting.
And I would love it if you went and listened and bought it. And
you know, actually, speaking of this, I wasn't going to tell you this, but I did spend quite a bit of time. Like a week ago, maybe a little less. Actually, and I went through every single song on Spotify that you have up.
Yeah, the ambient one took you a while.
Yeah, it did. But it's cool. Yeah, I liked it. Especially the one that has this really cool cello part in it. And it's just awesome. Like,
yeah, because you helped me record that.
Yeah.
You played.
Oh, and there's awesome shakers yeah, there, too.
That you played on it.
Didn't I do the cello, too?
No.
Oh, no, we redid it. You ended up doing the cello. Yeah. That's right. It was fun.
Yeah, your stupid cello bow.
I love my cello bow. Don't judge it.
I am. No. He has this fantastic cello, amazing cello. One day I will kill you and take that cello.
Yeah, good luck.
And that will be why
you're dead. Get in line. There's so many people who want to do that.
Yeah, but I will beat them too.
Especially the people who actually I bought it from. They want it back.
Ah, like, fuck
yeah,
them.
Right. I paid for it.
But
I sold it. That was such a cheap price too.
He has this. His stupid bow is twisted.
No, it's warped. What happened?
That's the same thing as being twisted. It's
what happened.
What
was,
is you can't just place it down and have it be flat all the way as you pull. You have to turn your hand as you do it,
which you're supposed to do on a cello anyway.
Not
you don't have to turn it as you do it. If you just hold it the right way, like I do, because I don't have any issues with it.
No, I watched you play. You do it subtly. You just don't think about it.
That's just me. I'm just stupid. No, but like okay, for those of you who don't know the story, this is what happened. I drive, or I used to drive.
No one knows the story. I don't know the story.
I know. I suppose. Okay, maybe you don't know this. I thought I told you. Oh, well. Back in high school, I used to drive a 1974 Vega GT, which, for those of you who don't know, it's a really old friggin' car. Old enough to be my parent. And it is a hatchback, and I used to take cello lessons in high school. So I would put my cello in the back of the car. It takes up a good portion of the car because it's not a small car, but you have to put the seats down in order to fit it in there. Let me put it that way. And it was a really hot day, and I had my cello lesson that day. So I went to school. It was at my school. So I go to school. I actually attended all my classes, like I have to every day, whatever. And then I stayed till my class. Well, I have nowhere to put my cello during school, so it stayed in my car. Little did I know, it was going to be a really hot day that day. So the heat actually heated up the wood in the bow, and the way it was in the bag, it warped to the bag, like bent over my cello, because the bag had the little like cello the bow slot in, on top of the cello, and it was laid down so the front of the cello was facing the window, which was facing the sun. And when I took it out, and, like, I noticed it was bent, and I was like, oh shit, this is gonna like fuck up everything. And actually my cello instructor was like, actually this is perfect. If it had warped any other way, this bow would be completely ruined. However, it bent in just the right way that a person who plays it as a righty, like myself and you, can actually play it correctly, and it won't cause any problems.
See, but the problem with that is someone who plays it as a righty who knows how to play it with a normal bow is trying to use a normal bow and to twist it like I'm supposed to, and then it doesn't work.
Yeah, well, maybe you should just learn how to use it my way. Please.
Yeah, so, anyways.
So that was the pointless story.
Some completely random rambling. We haven't had that since episode
like
three.
Yeah,
that was the weird one, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, but this one was really short aside from our rambling. Like, our rambling took up quite a bit of time.
Yeah, well, I feel like, it's partially because The Last Castle, there's
not much to say.
Not really much to say about it.
And the album we flew through.
I feel like the album's probably a longer segment than...
Yeah.
I could be wrong. I wasn't paying attention
to
the time.
I feel like the people who actually would listen to this actually listen to it for the little rambles.
That's fair enough.
I would.
Hey, and here's an idea. I'm going to, at the end of this, I'm going to tack on what the actual page is. By the time this is posted, we're going to have a Facebook page for Half Inch Speaker Podcast where you'll be able to follow it and keep up with us. And we'll post some cool links and stuff like that that we find. And another reminder, while we are going to remain on Podomatic, it will only be the most recent 3 or 4 episodes. And the Libsyn feed is where you're going to have the entire archive. And you can find that on, if you go on iTunes and you see the one that has all the episodes, that's the correct one. Or if you go to halfinchspeaker.libsyn.com.
Exciting. Yeah.
Check and out. That's it for Half Inch Speaker Podcast Episode 5. We'll see you next time.
Yes, we will. Or will we?
I thought you weren't going to do it this time.
I know. I thought I saw it. You were like, yeah.
You always
but we're not going to see them. No, really, we won't.
I'll see you guys in my heart.
I love you. All of you.
Well, mine's a hate heart.
Oh, okay. I was speaking as his heart.
It's opposite day. I hate to love. I'm not making any sense.
I love to hate. Only on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
And opposites attract, guys.
I don't fucking know
what we're talking about.
The square root of rope is string.
We're actually going to do this podcast for another 20 minutes. That was just the This is the half-inch speaker after show.
Well, we actually didn't really talk about what we're going to do next time.
Oh, we didn't.
Which is why I was like confused for a minute.
Ah, I completely forgot. Which we forgot to do last time, too. Yeah, I had to add something to the beginning.
Yeah.
Which I think I need to re-record because I think I said the wrong... I think it's the wrong name of the album.
Eh, whatever.
Whatever. But so I'm choosing the movie next time, and what we're going to be watching is a lesser known Studio Ghibli film called Whisper of the Heart, which is one of my personal favorites.
Cool. I'm choosing a really cheesy album this time. Well, I don't think it's that cheesy. I think it's actually pretty well done. But anyway, it's actually a soundtrack to a movie. An older movie. It is Eddie and the Cruisers 2. It's John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band is the actual band. It's on Spotify, so you can check it out. I'll send it to you, Bill.
All right.
So.
Excellent. And now, we'll see you next time.
No, we won't. He's lying. Don't listen to him.
We will.
He's lying.
I control the stop button.
No, he's lying.
I control the stop button. I control the podcast.
No.
We will see you next time.
No.